The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi, hello, football fans. I hope all's well, safe, and sound wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. We're ready to dive into the 2020 draft and, of course, the game of life. With our gang ready to go around the wheel, let's say hello to all of them now. Then let's jump in on all the big stuff going on. Ooh, did you hear? Justin Herbert might get drafted ahead of Tua. Fat, double fat. That's what Dameshek says. Don't buy all these smoke screens. How much longer do we have to indulge the nonsense that comes out in the Fortnite?
Literally 24 hours, Dave.
I know, but
much longer.
I know, but then 50 weeks from now, we're going to get back into it, and it all starts again. In fact, if there's a college football season, then we'll get into the part where, like, I don't know, in mid-October, I don't know if any of these kids out here is worth a first-round pick. Jump to the end of the story when Jordan Love inevitably goes in the first round. Hear me now, believe me later. Jordan Love is not going to make it through the entire first round. That and many more other storylines to cover with our pal starting off. You already heard his voice. Let's start off with him. He's our resident Miami Dolphins fan all the way from London, England. Fingers crossed, I'm assuming, that he winds up with Tua in the aqua and orange. Sooner rather than later.
Dave, I've never been more excited about a sporting event than this. This is finally the end of, you know, 2 decades of heartache for Miami Dolphins fans and not really having a franchise quarterback. Tomorrow night will be over.
Keep it going.
When they take Tua and everything turns around for the franchise. Super Bowl 3 years from now.
Well, I can't tell how glib you're being about this. I don't think it's the biggest sporting event of your life, but it is interesting that if I would have told anybody, you know, what, a year ago, 18 months ago, that the Dolphins, yes, all this suffering that you're going through right now does result in you getting Tua, the guy who threw the touchdown pass to vanquish Georgia, pulled off the big rally to win the national championship, you would have been over the moon. And now this nonsense owed to the GMs and personnel guys floating like, they might like Justin Herbert better than they like Tua. And I don't know about these medicals, even though he's already passed the medicals and everything, is a whole bunch of hooey and applesauce. Now, let's say hello to one half of the finest radio show in all the land. And, of course, I was just on it this week to Kibitz.
Yesterday.
The glorious new Los Angeles Chargers get-ups. And he is hoping, as the voice of the Los Angeles Chargers, that his team winds up with Tua. It's Matt Money Smith, everybody.
Yeah, already working on my touchdown calls, as a matter of fact, for Tua.
Ahoy, he's wearing the captain.
You want to hear it?
Yeah, let's hear one.
Here's what I'm thinking. And I don't want to scream it because my room is an echo chamber here, but it'll go, touchdown, Tua, Tagovailoa.
I like it, actually. Right. I'd be more down for it now. If he doesn't go to the Dolphins, I'm okay with him going to the Chargers as long as you do that every single time. No excuses, no alternatives.
I like that there have been during our lifetimes, there's been, you know, there's MJ people can go with, Kobe comes to mind, the one name, the little nickname, and that suffices. Shaq, obviously we could do a number of those, but people just refuse. They just checked out we're cool with just going Tua. Nobody out. I can't recall the last time I heard his surname actually mentioned in a public space.
Well, I think people are afraid to pronounce it, number one.
Right.
And that's two, what I'm saying. You know, the first name is Tua. It's a great first name.
His first name is not Tua. If you think Tagovailoa is difficult to pronounce, his first name is
true.
Tua Nigamanu-Lepola. It's spelled Tuanigamanuolepola. So, Money, if you're going to do it, if you're really going to own it, full first name every time.
By the way, that's a
legal
good
name here, Tua.
That would be a great thing to go out and not with regular people out on the street. I'm talking about people who've committed their life's work to talking about sports. And I'll concede right out of the gate, I can't do a good job with Tua's last name, nor can I do one with the Greek freak. Giannis I always stumble on it. See, I don't do it that way. Is that
Giannis? It's not Giannis. It's Giannis. It's Greek for John. So it's Giannis. And then it's Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo. I still can't get the rhythm right.
I worked with a Greek, so I got to hear it in the Greek pronunciation regularly. He's obviously his favorite player of all time.
I don't know. We like to Americanize everything. We after all, we call it the Tour de France. So I think we can modify a little bit. Eddie Spaghetti, go ahead. Open up your mic. How are you, fella? Looking good in your – is that a Bulls jersey? What a traitor you are.
It's Rodman. Robin for the last dance. I've been in a Bulls mood this week.
Maybe you guys weren't paying attention, but there's this thing on the TV called The Last Dance, and I've been watching it. And every time I watch it, I put on my outfit.
Money, I actually, well, first of all, Spaghetti, how are you?
Ah, all right. You know, getting by. Hair and beard's a little too long for my liking. You know, days like this when it's really nice out in Los Angeles, it kind of makes you go crazy. You want to do a bunch of stuff, but I'll probably just take a walk later or something. I don't know.
Eddie, because it doesn't look like the curves are being flattened on your end at the moment. It feels like the curves maybe are being emphasized a little bit.
I weighed myself before in preparation of any weight comments. I'm down again. I got a 3.5 mile run in this morning. I'm feeling pretty good. So
yeah, look at that.
Yeah. Maybe that accounts for the earthquake.
Eddie is fasting. Eddie's actually fasting like prior to the show, and then as soon as we sign off, he just starts mauling food.
Yeah. I'm a binge
eater. It's all water weight.
Spaghetti, go ahead and say the Alabama quarterback's surname.
Tuo Tagovailoa.
There you go.
I think everyone can do it.
And Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I find it borderline. I don't want to say xenophobic, but I'm putting this on myself. But that I can't stand that moment that you hear in broadcasts when it is a visiting player and they have to talk about him. I'm not even going to try that last name, and they get the play-by-play. The analyst has to rib the play-by-play guy. Like, you must have been working on that all night. Yeah, that's hysterical. But I count myself among those dopes. So.
Right.
Take no offense, people.
I will say that, and it is true, and DJ calls me on it regularly, because when you do practice, and, you know, for – I don't think I have it. Do I have any in front of me? I think I do. So when you do a game and you put together your so-called boards, you know, I always will spell things out phonetically. And, you know, every now and then when a player makes a big play, he'll be like, yeah, you just wanted to get that in there. You were dying to get that guy's name. Because you work so hard to make sure you pronounce it. And sure enough, he's absolutely right. And it always cracks me up when people, like, here's a good one. I don't know if you can see it, but there's old Larry Ogunjobi when they play the Browns. And it's, you know, oh, look, what do you know? There's Larry Ogunjobi who makes that play. And Daniel's always like, DJ's like, shut up. You and you're stupid. I got to make sure I get it. The guy won't even make the tackle. Oh, you know what, though, DJ? You saw Ogunjobi over there, and he certainly impacted that play.
Definitely an elite surname to say. Ogunjobi. Most of the best names reside in the NHL. And before we get into any of this, all the draft intrigue, where do you guys come down on? Because hockey, as of this morning, was in the news because – it was floated briefly, this neutral site thing in North Dakota or I don't know where, that they all return for some sort of limited run. And now it's maybe it'll be in 2 or 4 different NHL cities. I legitimately, and I talked about this last week with Ross Tucker and Jeff Schwartz, and I said, aren't we being cavalier? And I'm not trying to get up on Mount Pius, but aren't we being awfully cavalier about the players and all attending gigs surrounding putting on a live sporting event? However much you modify it, limit the bodies out there, there are going to be cameras and obviously coaches and trainers and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's going to be some percentage of guys that are going to be like, nope, not doing it. I'm not leaving my family behind to do stuff. I'm not leaving them to fend for themselves. One, but I'm also not sequestering myself with the rest of the league. And just as a caveat, as a reminder for anyone who listens to this show, fun fact about me, I really like watching sports on TV. And yet I think that it is a gathering storm. If the NHL owners are like, yep, get back, guys. And the NFL and the NHLPA even says, like, okay, some of us are willing to go back. I asked Tucker and Schwartz this. They said, well, Tom Brady would definitely go. There's no way he'd sit it out. Maybe Drew Brees would, though. And then what? Then you get in this weird space of, like, scabs or what? I mean, like,
this is where though, Dave, for you and I with our cannon arms, like, I only need Drew Brees and a couple other quarterbacks to say we're not playing and money. Like, you know, there are a lot of Brits in LA. I think LA has more British residents than any city outside of a English city. How about you install me at quarterback and see?
You're right. Yeah.
So far.
How about that's a great idea. I'm Chargers, you lost out. You lost out on Tua. Here comes Jua. Look, you know.
Easy there, Jerry Jeudy.
Listen, Southpaw, same thing. You know, fiery. You know, I'm about the same size.
They get upgrade the right side of their line, so you know they are set up for you. That's for certain.
I don't have the checkered health past. You know, I mean, unless you call low grade. Yeah, I mean, could say, you know, the doctors will tell you could stand to lose some weight, sure, but you know, that applies to at least one top tier quarterback that I can think of right now, kind of from the same neck of the woods.
I wonder which one.
Too. But anyhow, I
mean, to answer
yeah, what do you think? What do you think for real?
About that? Like one, no idea. I don't know who they're taking their cues from in terms of what, you know, what decisions they make, where they decide to do it, who gets sequestered, how long it's for. You know, Lee Steinberg was talking to CNBC. I saw him this morning on there about baseball, and he described it as kind of like a three-tiered plan where you run it like spring training and you start with pitchers and catchers. They're all tested and sequestered. Then the position players showed up, same thing, in three groups. Guys that have already had it have antibodies, guys that have never had it, guys that currently have it and are quarantined. And he says, you know, within a month of that tier, you start playing baseball games and you cycle on and off with teams so guys can go home and see their family. And when they come back, you start that process again of testing antibodies, not positive, positive in quarantine. And you can run that cycle over the course of X number of months. It's not going to be 162 games. I thought it was a real interesting proposition. That way you aren't asking people to be away from their families for 4 months or something, but instead maybe for 6 weeks at a time, which is still a long while. I think the most interesting part of it is, you know, a big thank you and you know, just immense praise and respect for all of those people that are working right now, that are putting themselves in harm's way, particularly in the medical field. But there's Amazon van drivers, UPS drivers, our postmen, our grocery store workers, people that are still operating takeout. Like, I can argue that baseball and hockey and basketball players are important. You know, that this country consumes sports more than anything else. It is the number one consumed product of our nation. And we'd be a lot better off emotionally and in terms of mental health if there were games to watch every night. And if you presented it that way to players, like, hey, believe it or not, you get dressed up in funny outfits and play a game, but it's important. Like, it is important to people.
I don't think, you know what, kind of teasing you about this. I think that one thing you don't need to convince those guys of is their importance in society. I think they get that. And I think that's not the tough sell. I think though that there will, I think almost certainly there, I mean, Clayton Kershaw as a, for instance, one of the bigger stars in baseball, if he said, I'm not doing it, that's going to create a crazy PR issue for baseball and for the Dodgers, and you know, people love to get
this is what I would push back on to Kershaw, right? It's like, Kershaw, I get you don't want to do it and you don't have to because you've made $300 million in your career, but guess what? There's guys that are vets that are in their last year that have never made more than $1 million a year, and if they don't play this year, they're not going to get paid and they're probably never going to play again, and this is their last shot at it. And you feel like you got a team that can win the World Series. Are you really gonna shortchange them because you don't want to do it? If, like, you can present it as, we are taking all the precautions for you to be safe, for you to stay healthy, and then I would just push back and say, you know, guess what? Those people probably don't want to do it at the grocery store either. You know, they probably don't want to do it in the delivery vans either. But they got to make a paycheck. And you know, if you drive around LA, there's guys doing construction every day, and they're wearing masks, and they're building, you know, whatever, individual homes and giant commercial real estate and SoFi Stadium, and maybe they don't want to do it, but they are. Now, again, I'm doing all that under the caveat of, if the people that know a hell of a lot more about this than I do, the medical professionals, say, no, that is stupid, then don't do it. But when I hear Dr. Fauci say, I could really use some baseball, and I do think there's a path for them to do this, obviously without fans, then I would say, hey, listen to that guy and see if you can figure it out.
I love exactly what you're saying, and I hope that's true. I just think that, as I say, one, you know, the big asterisk is the player safety. And, you know, what do I know about anything related to the law? But nevertheless, I'll dip my toe into those waters. All you need is for one guy, you know, one guy right. You force back in the platoon player for you know, the Mariners get something. And then, you know, the lawsuits and everything else. And if one guy doesn't do it, then the PR disaster of, like, you know, people love that, you guys are multimillionaires, who are you to complain? That kind of right. mentality, you'll get chunks of sports fans turning against the athletes. You think the kneeling stuff a couple few years ago was bad? I think refusing to do this, you know, cloaked in exactly what you're laying out, do it for your country, nope, not interested, is going to create a crazy PR situation for the leagues if they try to do that. Handsome.
Yeah, I agree, but I do think that there is, as compared to the kneeling issue and the anthem issue, everyone is going to be, well, not, there'll be more sympathy for people who don't want to do it. I don't think everyone is going to turn. I think baseball is a little bit different because, to Money's point, you can separate it. I think with football, the contact between players means that it's a different, literally a different sport, but I think it's a different approach. It's going to be hard to keep players away from each other and sort of quarantine one group from another. You know, people have very specific roles.
I think we live in I think this is a parallel that'll work. Tell me if it does or not. But I think about self-driving cars, right? And everyone's like, I don't let no computer drive me. And you're like, well, yeah, but if you look at the numbers, and accidents would drop by about 99.9% because the computers would be on a grid. And yeah, well, that glitch. And then I'm going to drive into a truck that it thinks is a cloud, you know, then I'm dead. It's like, yeah, but that's 0.1% of the time. And I think that's just the culture that we live under, in that it's not about the 99% of the guys that are A, going to stay healthy, or B, maybe contract it and deal with a, you know, perhaps a subtle or a somewhat, you know, gnarly case of COVID, but come out on the other side of it and be healthy. It's that worst case scenario. Oh my gosh, what if somebody gets it and it affects them to a point where they die? Then that's it. It's over. Like, and that's what they're thinking about, is that percentage, which I understand. Exactly. Totally understand. And that's how we are operating and how we approach it.
I think, you know, listen, believe me, I certainly, if I could pick what would entertain me for the next 6 weeks, it would be the Stanley Cup playoffs. I would love, certainly as a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, by the way, they get shake and bake Jake Guentzel back. Look out, NHL, right, yeah. Eddie Spaghetti? You know what I'm talking about. I wonder, I think – that the headache we're right now kind of sleeping on is this idea of some percentage of stars. And that's exactly right, Money. It's not going to be the Ham and Eggers that are, you know, trying to play for 2 or 4 years, make some money and set themselves up. It's the superstars who have enough money in the bank that they're not incented. They're not desperate to get out there and do it. And if those guys no-show, how that then would corrupt the integrity of a playoffs. As a, for instance, Alex Ovechkin says, nope, not doing it, I'm not risking it. Then Caps fans would you know, riot, perhaps not in the streets, but online at least. Anyhow, all right. I just was curious what you guys think about it.
To bring it back to the NFL, though, you know, the biggest news over the last 24 hours has been Gronk joining his former teammate Tom Brady in Tampa. You know, we talk like Le'Veon Bell, for example, and he kind of disprove this theory that, well, you take a year off at a certain age, then you come back healthier on the other side of it. And Gronk obviously has taken his year out and lost a lot of weight, but, you know, I guess presumably one of the things that factored into his decision to come out of a year hiatus was that he feels better and feels like he's ready to play again. But if those guys, if him and Brady, for example, don't, if football doesn't happen this year, a year further along, a year older, are they better off or are they worse off? And does that hurt? You know, that's to me is a tricky situation.
I want them to play in Tampa. I want it to happen. I want the
me too.
As Roger Goodell said, we're planning on starting on time. That's what I'm planning on as we sit here on April 22nd.
I can't wait until SoFi Stadium has Tua there with the visiting Dolphins.
Exactly right.
As their quarterback.
It's funny you mentioned that because we're going back to Miami, which means I have an opportunity to go back to that same water park that I was humiliated at this last trip I took there.
I might come with you, Money. Let's do it.
Please do. So I don't have to deal with the derision and the humiliation I suffered at the hands of me being a middle-aged man walking around a water park by himself, asking two young boys if they wanted to ride a particular slide with him because there were no single riders allowed.
That's the creepiest thing I've ever heard.
Sir, please move along. Please move along. Just give me a second here. Kids, listen. You put me in this thing, and we're going to go a lot faster and a lot higher on that, all right? There's more weight, and you're going to get more mass. And, sir, please leave the slide area. All right, I'm out of here. So, yes, Hank, please join me in Miami.
Well, since as Handsome takes a sip from his Miami Dolphins cup and Matt Money Smith wears his captain's hat, I don't know how exactly, I guess celebrating the Southern California Chargers. You know, the seafaring is a bit of industry here still. And so anyway, let's start there. And then I do want to talk about Burrow. But so you, all right, we have the Dolphins rep. We have the Chargers rep here. Does anybody here, and Eddie Spaghetti, chime in yourself on this one. Does anybody buy any of this jive that Tua isn't the 1A option for all teams that want a quarterback right now? It's just a question of who is going to elevate to get him. In all likelihood, it's starting to track in that way that the Skins might trade down from 2, or maybe the Giants are willing, if that makes some sense, or the Lions at 3. Everybody's been talking about that one since the Lions played their last game. I mean, Tua winds up to me with the Chargers or Dolphins and goes absolutely, positively no later than the 6th overall. Start with you, Handsome.
I agree. I mean, I don't see it happening any other way, but I can understand why there would be a certain amount of sort of conservative thinking amongst GMs who haven't had a chance to test him and pull his leg or whatever it is you need to do to make sure that his hip is still attached to the rest of his body, so that they can find out whether he'd be the right quarterback, not from a talent and mental makeup and everything else, which I think we've seen him do consistently at Alabama, but from a, is he going to be available to play 17 weeks a year or hopefully 21 weeks a year for the Dolphins in the future? But I agree with you. I think he's going, and I think probably when it comes to it, one of those two teams may wind up even trading up for him. It just occurs to me that in the past, when those trade-ups have happened, they've happened, you know, weeks out from the draft is where the value has been realized. And because of everything that's happening, and maybe this is just, you know, both either or both of those two teams trying to talk the value down. If it happens today or tomorrow, the Redskins or Giants are probably not going to get the picks that they would have got in a normal year for a team to trade up to 2 or 3 to take a quarterback.
Money, how say you?
Well, I disagree with your premise that it's hooey on Herbert. I've heard from enough people that there are Herbert fans out there that really, sure, really like him as a prospect, that love his build, love his stature, love his brain, his makeup, and believe him to be a solid, strong NFL quarterback prospect. So, and I know not for a fact, but I feel pretty comfortable saying that there are people in the Dolphins organization that prefer him. And look, it's medical, and medical changes everything. I mean, that is a scary proposition when you're going to invest a top 5 pick in a quarterback of the future and you're just not comfortable. You know, I know Mike Lombardi wrote about it at The Athletic, and he said, you know, I think he mentioned he talked to double digit GMs and over half of them weren't comfortable with him, that it wasn't just the hip and the clean bill of health, but the fact that he's got 2 ankles, that he had a wrist, and it just seemed like there was always something. And for someone who's so instinctive as a player, it's really hard to coach him into giving up on plays and to avoiding contact because he's just such a competitor and that's the way he's hardwired. It's almost the, you know, not that Russell Wilson gives up on plays, but he has this innate ability to get rid of the ball or get out of harm's way. Whereas Tua is so competitive and has such a strong, accurate arm that he's willing to hang in until the last second before he lets it fly. And that's where you get into this trouble. So that's one facet of it. I do think there is concern there that the NFL is just bigger, stronger, faster, and this guy's going to take hits, and we're worried about how he's going to hold up.
So you think the money, do you think – so to me, it was – in my mind, and you can talk me out of this very quickly, but to me it seems like the Chargers will either get Tua or – they'll be more than happy to take Isaiah Simmons and have a dominant defense ready to roll against Patrick Mahomes and company as they chase a repeat. That seems like a good move. Instead of Justin Herbert, who does feel still like a wild card and doesn't give you the pop in terms of, you know, PR or whatever you're right. looking for as you open a new stadium.
Tua's going to sell jerseys. Tua's going to sell tickets. Tua's immediately going to become one of the most popular sporting figures in Southern California. No, I have no doubt about that. I think about
it. But you think it is Herbert, not Isaiah Simmons, if it comes down to it.
I mean, I don't know. I really don't. And I just don't. The Chargers, and I work for the team, they play their cards so close to the vest, and they always have. You know, Tom Telesco told me a story. He said that in all his years of being GM, the one time that they were settled on a prospect more than anybody else with their pick, they were 100% certain they were taking Joey Bosa in 2016, and not a single mock draft or a single media draft analyst had them taking Bosa. They had them taking Tunsil, Ronnie Stanley. He's like, I don't think there was one. He goes, and we were locked into Bosa from the moment the process began. So I think that speaks to how misleading all of this information can be. So I don't know. I can just give you what my opinion is from talking to people around, you know, the people that we work with and other scouts that I've been able to get to know, current people, you know, that are employed and people that are formerly employed and now work in the media. And they have a big gap. You know, most of them have a gap between Tua and Herbert. So that would be my path, is I would rather have Isaiah Simmons at six. And then, you know, there's a lot of buzz on Justin Herbert and what they think he can, I mean, I'm sorry, a lot of buzz on Jalen Hurts and what he could develop into if you take mm-hmm. him at 37. And like you said, just build that dominant defense to slow down the Chiefs by taking Simmons at six, pairing him up with Derwin James. It's like having a Derwin James with an extra 15 pounds and 2 inches on him out on the field. But I would not be surprised at all if Tua is gone and they end up taking Herbert. I do think there's probably enough fans. Look, Tom Telesco has seen him play in a bunch. And of all games, he was at the Rose Bowl and he was at the USC game. So he got to see two of Herbert's best ever performances. And obviously that's going to go a long way when you see a guy in person making big plays to win a Rose Bowl for Oregon. I think is going to have a lasting effect. So I would not be surprised at all if Tua were gone and they decided to go with Herbert.
I also think it's funny to throw it in. I would say Telesco, this side of Ozzie Newsome, has been maybe the best drafter of the 21st century. So have faith, whichever way it goes, Chargers fans. He generally makes the right call, more so than his peers.
He does well.
Handsome.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, Telesco, I agree with you, Money, and it sounds like that's certainly the story, is that he doesn't – I think he's never even told his wife what the pick is going to be. On the other hand, the Dolphins have over the last few years, and this may just be because I'm kind of as locked in as I can be with everything that's happening around that team, but I've pretty much known who they were going to take in the first round of the draft for about 5 or 6 years in a row, and it came to fruition. And in some cases, it was guys that no one else was predicting to be in the first round. I remember when Juwan James was taken by them as a right tackle several years ago, and nobody else, you know, he wasn't showing up on any other mock draft. And then for about 2 weeks out, it was Juwan James to the Dolphins, but nowhere else was he going in the first round at all. And sure enough, on draft day, I remember when they drafted Jared Odrick, it was the same thing. But this time around, I feel like their Chris Greer, their GM, and the rest of their staff have done a great job of spreading misinformation. And literally every single beat writer in Miami has connected them with different quarterbacks. I've seen Dan Marino being quoted that he likes each of the three top quarterbacks and thinks they're the best prospect he's seen in a long time. So they have done everything they can for a long period now to sort of try and spread different word and to bring us to the point where we are now, where no one really knows what they're going to do. And even to the extent that people are now saying as of this week, oh, they'll probably take a tackle at 5 and maybe think about coming back for a quarterback at 18 when they have the Steelers pick.
I think the interesting nugget there is, and I've heard a very similar sort of thing out of that camp, is that it leads you to believe they don't want to trade up. They don't want to get rid of that draft capital. And I think the same goes for the Chargers. They have 7 picks, 1 in each round. If you know, because you have such promising prospects at the top of the draft, you know, I don't think Washington's going to trade back to wherever you might put the next quarterback needy team. Is it the Jaguars? Is it the Raiders? Because they think they got a shot at Tua, even though they have Carr and Mariota now on the roster. I don't think they want to trade back that far. So I think the way the Dolphins and the Chargers look at it is they're not going to trade back past us, because you want to get Okuda or Wills or Simmons, or, you know, be it Becton or what you want, one of these Chase Young, you want one of these dominant players that you're going, that you're not going to feel as good about if you trade back to, say, you know, 9 or 12 or whatever it may be. There's kind of that sweet spot of Chase Young, Okuda, you know, the first tackle and obviously the quarterbacks. And I think that's why you want to stay sort of in that 7 range. And I think that's why maybe the Dolphins and the Chargers are just stick and pick. And hey, what? We'll see how it plays out, man. We're going to sit here and feel pretty darn good about what's coming our way.
I also am not convinced yet. Call me a conspiracy theorist. I still am not convinced, given the Cliff Kingsbury experience a year ago, that now this has liberated teams to do what would have seemed unthinkable 2 years ago, which is trade Dwayne Haskins and take the QB they want at number 2. And obviously, the Lions would be thrilled with that news, or perhaps even Eddie Spaghetti's New York Giants would really love to hear something like that. But what about the number 1 overall, the thing that could really disrupt things? Do you guys buy? We have had in our lives 2 generations of the best QB perceived going into the draft pull the high hat move of I'm not going there. 1. 1983, John Elway, nope, not going to you, Baltimore Colts, thereby setting about a chain of events to beat the band. You know, the Baltimore Colts never leave Baltimore. If John Elway plays his rookie season there, they don't move in 84. Ergo, the Browns never moved to Baltimore. They moved to Indianapolis because there is no team in Indianapolis at that point. But anywho, then we have the Eli draft of 04. Spaghetti winds up with his guy after Eli says, no way I'm going to the Chargers, goes to the Giants, Phil to the Chargers, and the number 3 pick ends up being the best of the bunch. Thank you, Pittsburgh Steelers, for things breaking your way in that case. Why are you making your eyes at me like that, handsome? I'm just recounting the 2 times we've seen the number 1 overall.
Everything up until the way you said that the Steelers got the best.
They weren't part of the conversation. You were talking about Joe Burrow stiff-arming.
I'm just giving you the brief history. I'm giving you the brief history of what happened.
They are not part of the story.
They are involved.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
They're not. They're not.
All right. Either way, here's how it's involved. Ben Roethlisberger's from the state of Ohio. The Browns could have taken him. Instead, they took Kellen Winslow Jr., could have had Roethlisberger.
Another
Ohio kid. I was just trying to make sense of what you said. By the way, I do want to say quickly, Amani, I feel bad, and I don't mean to rub your nose in it, but Telesco doesn't involve you in personnel decisions, but someone on high in the Chargers organization clearly had their ears open to Damashek's uniform notes. How about those unis, right?
Beautiful,
numbers
right
on the side of the hat. Fantastic. Lightning bolt. Sans,
I'm so glad you got to see them in the end, Dave. It was very notable yesterday morning when the uniforms were released, and you know, everyone's favorite uniform guy, Dave Damashek. You know, we now know exactly what time your alarm clock goes off or doesn't go off, because it was 3.5 hours after they've been released that suddenly Damashek sees them, weighs in as if like no one's heard about this at all.
I just was letting all the ham and eggers get their bite at the apple. Sure. Then the
you wanted to really like exactly let them wait, let them settle in, and
everybody react now. You want the official word? Okay, here it comes. That's what I did. But they
nothing
are
nothing to do with you being asleep, then,
right? I mean, I mean, I don't want to confirm anything, but Handsome, are you excited about the uniforms? Money was kind enough with Petros to have me on their marvelous show. Always grand to kibitz with those fellows. But Handsome, I didn't get your thoughts on it.
Well, my first thought, which was this was like 2.5 hours before you woke up yesterday, was that they actually, and I even said it, they must have listened to you because it has some of your favorite little frills and tweaks in there. But I love them. I think they immediately, and I think they were already pretty much there before, but I think they're the best uniforms in the NFL. I love the
number one.
Number one. But yeah, I mean, they were already kind of close top three for me. I love the pants, the lightning bolt on the pants, and I love the yellow pants. I saw some dissension there where people were down on the yellow pants. I'm all about those yellow pants. They need to wear those. I mean, I don't know, Money, you can tell me, I'm sure, better. Whether those are the default home and away ones, the yellow pants, or whether we're still sticking with white.
They have always,
'cause that wasn't clear.
Yeah, they've always mixed and matched. Over the last couple of years. And, you know, last year, powder became their primary ahead of navy. Yeah. And yet, you know, sometimes it would be powder and white. Sometimes navies would come out at home. I think they do really appreciate their uniforms, and they do put a lot of thought into it. I had many beers with John Spanos on the road where I would verbally assault him with my ideas of what they should do with the uniform. And thankfully, John and I tend to see things very similarly. My one big push was gold pants. I said, you gotta do it. It is an absolute must to get those colored pants. The interesting thing about the Charger uniforms, and my absolute favorite is the powder blue with the gold pants. I think it's the best.
That's the number one.
I disagree. I go white hat, white pants. But okay, let's not quit.
The players love the navy. They love.
Well, navy one is, though. I mean, it's a beauty.
Like even like when they had their color rush, not the royal, which are my favorites. I love the Dan Fouts era royal blue. But the players, when they had a chance to put on their color rush navies against Baltimore 2 seasons ago, they were like, these are the greatest Charger uniforms ever. Like, it is interesting. And I think it's a younger thing. Like, my kids love the navies. They think it's the coolest looking uniform they've ever seen, the all navy color rush. And I think it's, I don't know what it is. It's a generational thing. I don't know if it's like the Ravens blacks or what it may be, but the younger, I'd say if you're under 25, like online with my Twitter feed, that was the thing. Like, anybody that was younger was like, man, those navies are the best looking unis I've ever seen. Whereas the older people are like, oh, look at the glorious powder blues and the numbers on the helmet, and the lightning bolt down the side. The nostalgia of it. They really hit a home run there.
I'm going to crown them, but only for 12 months when the Dolphins, I predict, will go back to their, they'll throw it back to the throwbacks a year from now and immediately reinstall themselves as the number one uniform in the NFL.
Imagine those all whites though, up in Vegas playing the silver and black. Imagine the Chiefs in the red pants coming into LA to play the powder blues. It's going to be a marvelous viewing experience at minimum to watch the AFC West. Now back to
with you at quarterback, Dave.
That's right. Jua. the AFC North, back to that.
Joe Burrow.
Back to the AFC North.
The Bengals have made it clear from their end. Back to, is this possibly, and yes, I'm trying to stir things up, and guess what? All the GMs out there are doing the same thing, so I'm allowed to do it too. Oh, no, we like Justin Herbert better than Tua. Ah, fat! All right, I hear what Money has to say. He's better informed than I am still. The Bengals want Burrow from that region. This would be a completely different level than Elway, the California kid saying no to Baltimore, or Eli, the SEC kid saying no to California. This would be a kid from that region and them saying like, I grew up watching the Cincinnati Bengals. I watched them every Sunday. No chance in hell I want to go to that team. Like, I mean, what if he pulls that move? Because I haven't seen, and I really did spend at least 90 seconds in advance of this podcast looking for any evidence. Yes, the Bengals have made it clear that they want Burrow, but is it definitely clear that Burrow's going to be like, love it, here's the jersey, I'm ready to wear the black and orange and make the Bengals the best team in football for the next decade and a half? Money, I start with you.
I think we would have heard by now that he wasn't. I don't think he needs to come out and say, I'm excited to play for them. But I think we would have heard, because we started to hear that about Eli, you know, the last time this happened, is it started, a couple of days before, as Hank mentioned. These trades typically get worked out well before the 15-minute window when you've got to try to put this thing together. So I would imagine we would have heard a little bit more buzz. And I guess you could argue we did have some with Peter King, you know, was kind of one of the first guys to put it out there. Like, hey, if you're the Miami Dolphins, why don't you offer 4 first round picks and go get Joe Burrow? And like, to me, that is maybe someone planting a seed that tells Peter, hey, you know, Burrow would really like to play in Miami. Or it could be the other way. Look, does Stephen Ross like Tua? Yeah. Does he like Herbert? Yeah. But man, he loves Joe Burrow. And it's the only team that could possibly trade up there. You know, I think if you're the Dolphins and you're willing to give up that kind of draft capital, and by the way, why wouldn't you? Like, if you think Burrow is that good, if you think he is your next Dan Marino that you've been searching for 20 freaking years, go get him. You're not going to have 12 guys make your team from 2 drafts or whatever it would be. How many picks do they have, Hank? Like 20?
They have 14 in this draft.
Guess what? Yeah.
14 guys aren't making your roster. Right. So why would you not package whatever it takes to go get the quarterback if he's that good? And you hear just the praise that is heaped upon him by all of these people that have been watching quarterbacks their entire lives. Just go get him. So that, to me, that's something that we'll hear today.
When I read that from Peter King and hear it from other people, it seems like a very one-sided argument. It's like, yeah, well, why wouldn't the Bengals accept it? Well, they're in the same position. Everyone really is looking for that quarterback who can lead your franchise, who can be the guy for you for 10 years, who can sell tickets for you. So if the Bengals believe in Joe Burrow, why would they say, oh, well, all right, Dolphins, we defer to you. We'll take those picks. I think everyone's in the same boat, and they just happen to have been the team that landed with that first overall pick and are going to make the pick. It makes itself in a way.
Well, I find it an intriguing possibility that until it doesn't happen, you're going to have a hard time disabusing me of the possibility because of exactly what you say. There are teams with the capital to do it. Right. The Dolphins make all the sense in the world based on what they have to give to the Bengals to trade out of it. And if the Bengals get a whiff, and I think basically the organization saying we're taking him, we love this kid, is probably a strong indication none of this is going to happen. But if the Bengals, there would be, I mean, can you imagine the black eye for the organization if a kid from the region said, yeah, I don't want to go there? I mean, that would be a hard one to come back from. So if they have any inkling that may happen, they would try to save themselves from that ugliness and move the first over.
Yes. To me, the only way they do it is if they have a very similar grade on Tua and are comfortable with the medicals, or Herbert. You know, if they're like, hey, look, here's Burrow is, you know, to use our, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, Lance Erline grades, if Burrow is a 6'9" and Herbert's a 6'8" or a 6'7", then okay, we'll take 18. We'll take your 4 first rounders and another second and a second next year. And we feel comfortable. We coached Justin Herbert at the Senior Bowl. He was, you know, considered one of the best prospects the entire week. He won the MVP of the Senior Bowl itself. We know, and that's how you sell it, right? Like, well, believe it or not, you know, we know this guy, Herbert, and we know he's good because we coached him up to a heck of a week in Mobile and a heck of a game in Mobile. And by the way, we also got 18, whatever it is, 27, 25, and we got all these second rounders and a one next year as well. So we feel that's the only way that happens, is if they're comfortable with another quarterback that they're going to get at 5.
I mean, I could cobble together all these more elaborate scenarios where you wind up with, if you're the Bengals, somehow maybe wind up with a Cuda and Herbert or Tua if you move back and gain the participation of the Lions. Anywho, enough about that. Let's talk about Last Dance, and or in the time we have remaining here, we have a couple of minutes. Want to go Last Dance thoughts?
Let me inject something real quick, if I may.
Go ahead.
Because I want to bring this up with Hank. I brought it up 2 weeks ago when we talked, and the name, as you see on my screen right here, is Ben Stokes. Who's Ben Stokes, Hank? Tell the people.
Ben Stokes is an English cricket player, an all-rounder, batsman and bowler for England, and a true hero, a genuine, apart from some you know, potentially off the field activities, the guy that every cricket fan in the UK wants to be.
So here's my question. As a man who just completed this this Amazon Prime series called The Test that I've recommended before, I'll recommend it again, Crikey, the Aussie team, which I was cheering for and wanted to see nothing but perish and peril for the England side, especially after this moment. A man who was called the greatest cricketer in the world, a man who was embroiled in a cheating scandal, Steve Smith, my brother, all right, my younger brother, old Steve Smith there from Australia.
You have a lot in common, actually.
Oh, yeah. He gets absolutely destroyed by this guy, Archer, who's throwing this wooden ball like 200 miles an hour or something like this. And nobody blinks an eye. Like these guys in cricket, these bowlers, I don't know how fast they're throwing the ball, but it's like a wood ball. It's wildly dangerous. And there's no speak whatsoever, no conversation about them being wild and cracking these guys in the hands and the head and the legs. Like, oh, yeah, bloke, that's just the way it goes. You know, you get in there and you batsman against Archer and you got to be careful. You better keep your head on a swivel while you're in here. What? These guys can just throw at your head and nobody says peep or boo about the fact that he's headhunting out there?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the game, Manny. You know, the Brits have grown up playing this game and we don't need to wear gloves. It's like when I was once offered the chance to go play for the NFL, had a company softball team. And I said, well, I don't need the glove. Well, I don't need a glove to play. You know, and everyone was like, oh my God, this English guy, he's crazy. But you know what? We don't need that stuff.
But I'm specifically speaking to the bowlers. They are allowed to throw at your head. And it's not a big deal.
Well, here's the problem, though. If you're a bowler that does that, what happens is when you have to bat, and because most bowlers are not good at batting, with the exception of someone like Ben Stokes, who does both well, the other team is like, hey, remember Jofra Archer was threw it at 100 miles at your head? We're going to do the same thing to him, but exclusively. There won't be anything other than that. So you have to exactly.
It's basically being an American League pitcher. There are no repercussions for you at throwing at the other team. Only the National League pitchers have to get in the box after they throw at somebody's head.
Right.
Hey, but ultimately, the wood ball, I'm guessing the wooden ball.
Why are you not Steve Smith?
Because I wanted to twist your nipples.
But is it what hurts worse, Handsome? Have you experienced both getting hit by a baseball and a wooden ball? What hurts worse?
Well, the ball isn't wooden. It's leather. It's leather bound with a kind of cork interior, and then you know, whatever you make a ball out of, it's kind of like a baseball, exactly. So it hurts to get hit with it, sure. And it still scares me. Last summer when I was back in the UK, I played cricket, and you play it in a net a little bit, like I guess when you're practicing baseball, a batting cage, and if you haven't done it for a while, it's kind of scary when you see it coming at you.
Has your eldest Ronnie swung the cricket stick or whatever they call it?
Cricket bat. He's a big fan. We were playing in the backyard yesterday.
It remains one of the great mysteries to me. And I've taken this to the highest levels, including Tommy Lasorda, for an answer on this one. What is the proper explanation for why these big league pitchers, who are undoubtedly, I mean, at least 9 out of 10 of them, have to be by far and away the best hitter on their high school team, probably on their college team. Why, when they get to the major leagues, it appears as though they've literally never held a bat? I mean, it's one thing to like, all right, you're not gonna slug it for 400 in the bigs against top tier pitchers. But I mean, they look ridiculous. I mean, they look like you sent Mo Damish to the plate. Because they're not getting the reps every day. All right, they don't have to look like the uncoordinated old ladies either.
Or I would say, give them the reps. If they were the best player, and that you're absolutely right. Typically, your high school baseball team, your best pitcher is your best hitter. They're just an unbelievable athlete. At least that's how it was when I was, you know, back in high school a long time ago. But I don't get why they just don't give them the reps. Well, if they only pitch every 5 days, and I know you got to get out there, you got to have your long toss and your bullpen session, throw them in the cage every single day. Why would you not do that and have them be two-way players in the National League? I should say, actual legitimate hitters.
Boy, that's a great point that I hadn't thought of with the 5-day thing. Right. If you develop them into capable enough pinch hitters, then you don't have to have that deep a bench. You could just have the deepest situational pitching staff out in the bullpen waiting to bring in. The games would take 17 hours, but still, you could just go, you could go batter by batter. Now we're going to go with our next righty guy that we have hiding in the pen. Last thing, is this funny handsome as an AFC East rival? Well, not rival isn't the proper term. Against the Patriots. Are you amused by what seems to be going down, which is that Tom Brady wanted to keep playing? He just didn't want to do it for Bill Belichick, and it kind of looks like the same thing is true for Gronk.
Well, it feels like you were talking about, you know, sports documentaries. I feel like 10 years from now, we're finally going to get the truth from some Patriots, including Gronk and Tom Brady, about how badly they wanted to get out of Foxborough and why they wanted to and what life under Bill Belichick was really like. Yeah, people have talked about what's the documentary, what's the inside scoop you'd really most like to hear. And I completely understand that the Patriots can put a lid on everything that's happened up until now. But the moment that Belichick retires and those guys, you know, some of them wind up in the media, we're going to hear those stories. And we will find out what it was that made Gronk say, I don't want to play for Belichick so badly that I'm going to retire. And then given half an opportunity, 12 months later, I'm going to come out of retirement instantly to join a team, which, look, I'm excited about the Bucks, and I think it's cool that Tom Brady's going there, but I don't necessarily think that that's a team that's going to turn it around. I'm sure this is the kind of thing that will show up 6 months from now when the Bucks are hoisting a Lombardi.
But I don't want to hold you guys up, so I'm just going short answers here. Sorry to interrupt you, Handsome. I know you both have to cut here. Mm-hmm. Who gets in money the Bucks' path of getting to the Super Bowl NFC side?
Right. Real quick, Hank. Nice glass, dork. Second thing is Hank takes a sip from his Dolphins tumbler. All right, the draft is tomorrow, so I want to make sure I drink out of me Dolphins glass today, because it's going to bring me good luck in the selection process.
That's it.
Me Dolphins glass.
So, one, the Saints. I think the Saints win the division. Two, I'm going to say the Seahawks, and I think the Seahawks and the 49ers. So there's one wild card. And then that's where I start to be like, you know what? Maybe I'm talking myself into this Tampa thing. Because how comfortable are we with all the departures from the Vikings? Are we comfortable with the Vikings moving forward? No, I'm not. So I'm going to give the division to the Packers, and I have no idea if that's going to produce a second wild card. Are we I'm comfortable with the Eagles in the AFC East. I'm sorry, the NFC East. And I'm not really sure about anybody else. So it's like,
I think the Bucks make the playoffs. I'm not saying that that's not going to happen. I think when it comes to it, against a 49ers team, against a Seahawks team, against a Saints team, they wind up falling short.
Well,
and that might be because of Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski rather than despite them.
The bottom line is it's very funny to watch Patriots fans really struggling to try and make sense of all of this. Like, no, it's cool because we got all those Lombardis. Like, so now you're Belichick, like, yay, we coach gooder than your team does. That's what you're left with. And those, right. By the way, the Falcons.
Oh, they're terrible. What are they?
The Falcons got all the attention for the bad uniforms, but I dare say that the Patriots look even worse. Their road ones were awful, right?
Terrible. I'm with you 100%. Terrible.
All right, listen, I know you fellas got to go. Appreciate, as always, you making the time.
We'll do the last dance next week.
Okay.
Celebrate Tour coming to South Florida.
Oh, I can't wait to put a pin in that one. One way or the other, we're going to have somebody happy.
Very sad. One's going to be very sad. Maybe both of us are going to be very sad next week. Who knows?
Maybe the joke will be on all of us, or me specifically, for laughing about the Patriots circumstance when they have Tua starting at quarterback when the NFL season starts. All right, fellas. Good times. Appreciate you. You too, Eddie Spaghetti. Keep on losing them pounds, allegedly.
I'm 160.4 again. I weighed in right before, so still up 2/10 of a pound.
226.4.
Congratulations, Eddie, if that's Thank real.
Last week down to 185. It was a new low for me in probably half a decade, but I think with the chocolate banana bread, that I've been eating. But have you heated that up in the microwave and slathered some butter on it?
I don't need to. I get it. I get it before it comes out of the oven.
Yeah. Well, just either way, try some butter on there, friend. There you go. Thank me later. All right. Thank you, fellas, for doing it. Matt Money Smith, obviously, Petros and Money. And,
And I'll be on the NFL.com right after the draft with Lance and Bucky and Rhett. We're doing a post-draft wrap for however long it takes to get through that immediately after the draft ends on NFL.com. So if you want to check that out.
All right. Be on the lookout for that. And we'll kibitz with you next week. Until then, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.